Hello and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to episode 102 of the Crick Picks podcast. I'm Behram Kazi, who you can find at Def Mango on Twitter. With me is my colleague Varun Alvaconda, who you cannot find on social media, even if you try. And then we've got Jared Kimber as well, who you can find literally everywhere. All three of us in front of you on Combox TV, where the game lives on. If you are new to Crick Picks, what we do on the show is that we take any generic cricket category and we draft our top five each for that category in a snake-style draft competition, which basically means that the pick order goes 1-2-3, 3-2-1. Jared, you wanted to say something.
When you can't find Varun on any social media, or even on Discord, I was trying to tag him in. I tagged in some other random dude. Sorry to the real Varun, not this Varun.
Yeah, for the Discord family, you can find him at No One Knows 24. Is it Varun?
I think it's regular No One Knows. He doesn't know. No one knows.
Yeah.
Even his handle is No One Knows. So yeah, it's really
no,
really
it's very
tough
odd.
To...
Like because I use that everywhere. For some of them, I just forget to update the years. So there's some which is like 2022 still. So it's I don't know.
Get a hold of the guy at your own peril. He is not easy to catch. All right, then. So it's an interesting topic today. I reckon Varun probably came up with it. The best test bowlers to not have, you know, kind of taken a 10-wicket haul. Varun, how did you come up with this? What was the inspiration?
I think someone else came up with this. I came up with the other one you guys will do next. That's what happened.
Yeah. Interesting. Well, it's going to be a very, very interesting podcast because after the first five picks or so, it gets really random. I have first pick, and there are about three names that are really kind of screaming to me. And I think I'm going to just have to make a judgment call over here. I'll go for the OG bowler, Joel Big Bird Garner, as number one pick for me. And the record speaks for itself. 58 test matches, 259 wickets at less than 21 apiece. His economy is less than 2.5 as well. Great defensive bowler in ODI, super tall. There's a reason they called him Big Bird and a menace to face. I know the other two names are going to come up shortly, but do you think, guys, that I've gone with the correct first pick? Because I'm not sure.
I think there's three names that could have gone first, and I think that you've picked one of them without any issue there at all. So I don't have any issue with this. I think this is a very solid pick.
All right. Yeah, well, definitely. Most people at Combox are big Joel Garner people anyway, and if we don't kind of subscribe to that notion, then Jared will fire us. We know that. All right, then. Who's up next? Varun?
I believe it's me. I'll take Jasprit Bumrah, please.
All right.
As a Bumrah fan. What I think makes him very unique on this list is he's got 5-9 first, which is the most for anyone on this, like what I've looked at. So it's he's gone so close. But he's, like, I don't know if that's more or less impressive that he's gotten that close so many times in this list, if it makes sense.
Yeah, and you know, it's fascinating because at least with Joel Garner, you know that there are other people in that same team who are probably taking a lot of wickets. But Bumrah overseas, you'd think that he would have taken a 10-for. I get it that in India, it must be really tough with the spinners, especially when he was bowling in tandem with Jadeja and Ashwin. But, you know, he has such a splendid record everywhere he plays. This is a guy who is the only person who's taken thus far more than 200 test wickets and has a sub-20 bowling average. And
can I tell you why he doesn't have more?
Why?
Because... the same reason of the person I'll have to pick at number three is I reckon most of his career he's played with five bowlers.
Yeah.
It's a lot harder to take 10 wickets if you're part of a five-man bowling attack just because there aren't always as many overs available to you. And you're not – if there's a bunch of wickets falling, you might be the best bowler, but they might be like, oh, well, let's give it to someone who's a little bit fresher. Hmm. So I think it's as simple as that. But, yeah, I mean, he will probably finish with a 10-wicket haul. So, he should. But then again, so should have Joel Garner, even in that great bowling. Like, it's all well and good to say, oh, Joel Garner bowled in a great bowling lineup, so he never took a 10-wicket haul. So did the other guys who took 10-wicket hauls.
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was rather startling to see Bumrah on the list because, and I'm sure that whoever came up with the idea kind of had Bumrah in their minds as well, because he does have a sub-20 average. We're not sure if he'll be able to maintain that because that's going to be tough work. But surely you'd think he'd ultimately get a 10-for because when India do play away from home and the spinners aren't as much in play, there's got to be one test match where he just runs riot. And he already has run riot, as Varun said, 5-9-fers, right?
Yeah. I don't think he'll end his career without a 10-wicket haul, but also don't think he'll get a lot. Is probably the other way I would look at it.
Fair enough. Okay, then. Pick the other obvious candidate, Jared. We all know who you're going to pick. And your dad's going to be pissed off on this pick, isn't he?
No. I don't think... No, then it isn't. I think you guys have missed someone here.
Okay.
And I'm just going to check to make sure that I haven't stuffed up myself. No, I haven't stuffed up.
The most wickets on this list.
No. Ray Lynmore.
Yeah, okay. I had him in my list. Yeah,
I had him as well. I wanted you to pick him because there's only so much I can tell the world about Ray Lynwall.
I mean, Ray Lynwall will change cricket forever because he's the reason we don't have the back foot no ball law anymore because he found a way of around that. And unfortunately, instead of just going, you can't do what you're doing, Ray, they went the opposite way and they brought in the front foot no ball law, which has ruined bowlers around the world. But essentially, one of the fastest bowlers of his era and also swung the ball around corners. But as I said before, another guy who was stuck in a five-man attack. And so for whatever reason, I mean, he's got 230 wickets at an average of 23. Like, how he hasn't ended up, I don't know. Did he end up with any 9-wicket hauls, Varun? I'm assuming he probably did as well, would be my guess.
His best figures are 9 for 70 in a test match. And his best bowling in an innings is 7 for 38. So that was the test match, Ray.
He should have probably ended up with a 10-wicket haul. But as I said before with Jasper, again, he would have played a lot with Keith Miller. And they would have had other all-rounders as well at times in that Australian side. So there was probably just multiple bowling options. So perhaps he didn't always come on to finish up and get those 10 wickets the way that he could have. But definitely, he's one of the greatest bowlers of all time. And all three of these guys should have ended up with a 10-wicket haul.
Yeah, and what about Lynwall's partners? Who was he bowling in tandem with? Were there some greats over there?
Yeah, so he shared the new ball with Keith Miller, who averages about the same, doesn't he? Maybe even less than he does. That was definitely the engine room of that Australian attack, but they had lots of other decent bowling options around them as well. I'm trying to remember how far... Well, actually, he played a lot of tests, didn't he? So his career must have overlapped with Alan Davidson and Richie Beno as well, I would have thought, a little bit. So a lot of very good Australian bowlers around at that time. But yeah, still should have gone to Wicket Hall. Okay, next on my list, very interesting to see that I know who Bayram wants to be next on the list.
Yep.
But I want
PK off.
we can definitely piss him off. Don't worry. He will be. But my next on this list is Bob Willis.
Okay. Yeah, I had him pretty high as well.
I had him, yeah.
I know he played with both of them. So my five-man bowling thing does work. But me and Bayram have done a lot of research on this. There isn't actually, Bayram, a lot of England bowlers taking a lot of wickets in this period, right? Like, it's not specifically like he was fighting. He didn't have Keith Miller at the other end, right? He didn't have Jadeja and Ashwin and Shami.
He's very interesting, right?
Yeah, very
interesting.
But how many wickets did 82, he take?
It was a very good... He was actually playing in a very good bowling attack because Botham wasn't completely out of his mind yet. Like, Underwood
also, Varun, so there's a maybe brief you can pull out... Bowling attack. I feel, Varun, maybe you can pull out his adjusted numbers that will give us some more context and his match factors and stuff, because his raw numbers are quite impressive. 325 wickets in 90 test matches at 25.2. So, you know, that's a pretty good bowling average. And he took an 8 for an innings.
I don't have his adjusted numbers. So, I have his match factor is 1.11.
Oh, interesting. So 11% better.
So it's not, his numbers don't quite stack up when you have a look at that, which I think is probably part of his reputation. But 16 5-wicket hauls... It's, again, to take 300 wickets in Test cricket, especially he was a bit of a weird dude.
Four nine first, by the way. He's got the next most after Bumrah. It's the most wickets for a bowler without a 10-foot in Test cricket as well.
Yeah, I think he was at the top of the list, yeah.
But also,
like, he's a weird dude. Like, he's a bit of a hippie. He renamed himself after Bob Dylan. That didn't go down particularly well when Jon Snow was a bit weird. Like, there's many reasons for England cricket to not keep him around, but he was so good and he did carry that attack. It's shocking to me that he doesn't end up with a 10-wicket haul because there's a lot worse bowlers than him in the history of the game. And as I said before, he did this for a very, very long time. So that was one of the reasons I have him a little bit higher. I think there's two other bowlers who are maybe slightly better than him coming up next, but to be able to play, 90 tests in that era, I think is a remarkable career to have.
And he did share the new ball with Jon Snow. Is that a fact?
Did he go back that far? I'm trying to remember when he started, mate. They might have. 69. Yeah, there would have been a little bit. But he kind of replaces Jon Snow in that side. Interesting bowler if you have a look at him too. Like, not really your traditional kind of English seamer. And probably would have been really good with someone like Anderson or Bedser or someone else at the other end. Like, you know, but they, that both of them was probably the second best bowler he bowls with consistently, isn't he?
And he does get overshadowed, right? Because the emergence of Jimmy Anderson and him going on to play take 700 plus test wickets, I feel like that makes people forget also, Bob Willis.
Brett Herman before him, right? I believe.
Yeah. I mean, also, I just don't think he had the impact on games as much as they wanted. But part of that is part of the reason he's probably not got as good a bowling record is that England weren't taking a lot of wickets from the other end either.
Yeah.
So he's not like at that Faisal Mahmood, Richard Hadley, one-man bowling attack level, right? He was down on that. But if you put him in a good attack, I actually think he's probably more similar to maybe one or two of the names that are about to come up. But he didn't have the backup in that attack. I mean, they were really poor too. They also weren't making any runs, right? Like it was the vast majority of Willis's career. I shouldn't say that because he plays in the 70s. But that sort of the back half of Willis's career, they are really starting to struggle as a team for a long period of time.
And he was also a bowling captain, and you don't see a lot of those guys around. He does have an impact on the game eventually in the sense that Bob Willis will be remembered for a lot of other reasons because he was a big voice in cricket. And then there's some charity that runs on his name as well, right? Like a day dedicated to Bob Willis.
Yeah, there's one at the Oval, isn't there?
Yeah, I think. I'm pretty sure it's at the Oval. Beautiful mop of hair, you know, on top, which kind of just fluffs around. And his best bowling innings is 8 for 43. And he was the skipper. So if he was a greedy bloke, he would have gone for that 10 for. And I mean,
when you think is the 8 for 43, is that, I'm trying to remember when he took that.
That was Headingley, right?
Yeah, isn't that the second innings at Headingley when he wins the game?
True. Like, I mean, you're right.
When he got on a run, he was absolutely incredible. And that test is obviously known for both of them. But, you know, he's the Harbhajan to VVS in that test match, right? Like, he really is the person who kind of does it. And again, as I said, there's lots of periods of time where you look around and you look at those bowling attacks. They had Mike Hendricks, right? Mike Hendricks is probably not going to make our list, but my guess is Mike Hendricks might be one of the best bowlers ever. Let's see if I'm right here.
Did Mike Hendricks change his name as well, the last name, to sound like Jimi Hendricks? Is this
No, it's Mike Hendricks. Sorry, I'm saying Hendricks. Oh. It is Hendrick anyway. Okay. Yeah, I think Mike Hendrick might be one of the best bowlers ever to end up without a 5-wicket haul. So he ends up with 87 wickets, Mike Hendrick, and never took a 5-wicket haul. So even when they had a good bowler like Mike, they didn't, you know, they had guys like Jeff Miller and Botham. It wasn't that they had no bowlers, but they didn't really have a strong overall bowling attack. And so I think the kind of bowler Willis is, he would have been perfect with you know, a really, really high, you know, if you took Bob Willis from that era and you put him into the current Australian team, right? He'd be fantastic. But I think being the lone man probably got to him a little bit at times.
In his era, people still like rated him quite highly because he takes north of 300 wickets, which was a thing back then, right?
It was big.
If I'm not wrong, he did become the highest wicket taker for like a little bit over there. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I'm not quite certain.
In England or worldwide?
Perhaps worldwide, no?
I might have because Lance Gibbs would have taken the world record in the 70s and Botham ends up with it. Does Botham end up with it? Or does Hadley go past Botham? So yeah, it might have been, you might be right, Bob Willis might have had the world record for the most wickets, which again is, you know, it was a weird time for English cricket. And to play that long and do what he did. And not probably always get the recognition that he should have because, you know, Botham and Boycott are around. And as Varun said before, you've got Truman before him, right? There was a lot going on in English cricket at that time.
True. And like, you know, modern day cricket fans wouldn't really get to know much about him because it's all about Jimmy Anderson and Stuart Broad now. And what's fascinating to me is that it took 102 episodes for someone to pick Bob Willis on Crick Picks. I reckon he hasn't been picked yet.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself. You know, I suppose if you're doing, you know, some of the best spells of all time, but I don't think we came up with the Headingley one even. Yeah. I don't even remember it being on the long list. And yet it probably should have been there as well.
Yeah. I'm not even sure if we've done that Crick Picks, the best spells of all time. It's a good one.
Haven't we? I thought we did that early on.
Maybe we would have. I can't remember, but I'm glad that Bob Willis has gotten picked. It's back to Varun, but before he goes on and makes his second pick, we will be taking a short break. You guys are watching Crick Picks with Bairam, Jared and Varun, and go nowhere because we will be back very, very shortly.
I have traveled the cricketing world, and so I've collected two things, the phone numbers of random taxi drivers and overseas SIM cards. Rideshare apps have fixed the first part, and Sally is doing the second. Now, all you need is their eSIM on whatever plan works for you. You activate it and you can use it anywhere in the cricketing world. It helps you save money. It is a global solution to a global problem. Stop fiddling with tiny SIMs and get the one that does it all. Go to selly.com good areas and use the code good areas to get an exclusive 15% off your first purchase. Fly free with Selly.
Welcome back to the Quick Picks podcast. We're you with Varun, Bairam and Jared, and we are currently drafting the greatest test bowlers who have never taken a 10-wicket haul. Varun, it's your second pick, and there's an obvious one, but I'd like to see you surprise me.
Is there an obvious one? Because I was, I think after the first two, I was completely lost.
Oh, okay. I want you to fuck this up then.
Yeah. You didn't even have.
I had all of them on the list. I just didn't have an order for any of them after the first two.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think this is right, but I'll take Jason Gillespie.
Okay. All right then. Fine. I mean, Dizzy would have gone on this draft anyway, but I think you might have taken him a smidgen too early.
That's exactly where I had him.
Oh, really?
Exactly where I had him.
Oh, yeah. Let's go.
I mean, Dizzy's career is marred by injuries, so that's also
probably... Is it marred by injuries, though? I mean, by the end of his career, he still takes a lot of wickets, doesn't he?
It's odd that this is a guy who scored he scored a double 100 in Test cricket, that too in his final Test match, and he doesn't have a 10 for.
Yeah, I think we're quite a lot with him.
The Ashes, I know that.
Yeah, he had one bad series. I mean, he had a couple of bad series towards the end because he was on his way out. But he takes 259 wickets at 26 in a great batting era, right? Like most of his career, he's played in the great batting era. I don't know what Match Factor says about him.
1.34.
I mean, 34% better than the bowlers in his game, and that includes Shane Warne and Glenn McGrath in those stats. I think
I think Bumrah and Garner are 1.37.
There we go.
He's not that far behind them. Yeah.
I think at his absolute best, he was pushing McGrath at times, and McGrath was maybe has an argument to be the greatest test bowler of all time. When he was really fast and still moving the ball around, it's a little bit like basically Jason Gillespie's career has probably ended up very similar to what Shane Bond should have been, right? Which is he was fast, but he was also skillful. And so that was the thing with Bond. Everyone was hoping that eventually he'd just be able to pull back the pace and still be good and everything else. And I think Gillespie did that. I had Gillespie at 5. Where did you have him then, Bairam? How far down?
I mean, I would have picked both Aussie bowlers if I had my turn up like next, right? Like, but I'm convinced. Like, I'm not fighting you guys.
By Aussie bowlers, you mean Peter Siddle?
I mean, he's also in the reckoning, right? But probably not going to get picked. I mean, Binger's in there as well. I shouldn't be name-dropping, but there are a few Aussie bowlers. Thing with Dizzy is that I find it quite fascinating that he ends up with the exact same wicket tally as Joel Garner. Garner got 259 test wickets in 58 games, and Dizzy plays 71 test matches. So he's obviously no Joel Garner, but he's taking his wickets at 26 apiece, and that is including the fall-off towards the end. I reckon that average would have been a lot lower when he is in his full pomp. Right.
Yeah. Also, if he bowls the majority of his career in the 90s or the majority of his career now, he's probably a 22, 23 average bowler, right? Like it's a very different era to be in at the moment. And so you have to remember exactly when he was bowling. If you compare that to, say, someone like Bob Willis, who I think was bowling in a slightly lower average era. And so, you know, their average might look similar. The only reason I would have gone for Willis over Gillespie was just because I think Willis had a really, really long career. And I think he would have been, if he had McGrath or Warne at the other end, I think Willis would have had a much lower average than he ended up with.
True. No, absolutely. And I mean,
Dizzy has eight 5-fers and 3 9-fers. So I'm like, that's a very good conversion rate when he's on. Yep. So
he took a 7-fer in an innings. So that was probably his best chance. But yeah, I mean, I'm happy that you took Dizzy because now I know which two players I'm going for. I would have gone for him as well, but I was convinced that Varun is going to be the one who would upset Peter Kimber. I'll do the honors. I'll pick Josh Hazlewood. And I'm rather surprised that he's lasted this long, right? I mean, look, he's another one of those guys who, if he remains fit, he's probably going to end up with a 10-wicket haul, right? 295 wickets in 76 test matches. He's taking his wickets at an average of 24.2. His economy rate is 2.77. And he's one of those line and length guys who's just going to continue to hit that nagging length. He's going to nip the ball either way. And he's a tall bloke. So I suppose both my picks are, you know, tall, fast bowlers. And yeah, I mean, it's quite similar to Garner in the sense that he's bowling in a pace attack, which is going to do, or, you know, Stark and Cummins are going to end up with wickets themselves. So that's probably why Hazelwood hasn't ended up with a 10 for his best bowling figures. Yeah, yeah. And line. His best figures are 9 for 79 and best bowling innings is 6 for 67. But then again, Stark and Cummins have 10 fers, right?
I think the difference is quite often he'll go and just moving the ball around a little bit early on, and he doesn't even always get the wickets. The wickets go at the other end. It's actually very rare for Hazelwood to take a big bunch of wickets. It's usually he usually bowls unplayable spells. And yeah, maybe that's similar for, you know, Garner and Gillespie as well. I don't know. Like, maybe there's a kind of a type of bowler. I don't think Hazelwood will get a 10-wicket haul, by the way.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, no. Look, now we're not even sure how many more tests he's going to be able to play. Yeah. I highly doubt he's got 100 tests in him, right? If he's just played 76 thus far.
He's also so injury prone, and also they're more likely to bowl 5 bowlers now than ever before.
Yeah. Plus, you know, you've got Stark at the other end who's going to be bowling the attacking lengths. Hazelwood will just continue to pitch it in the same area and bowl defensive lengths. So perhaps that's how he's ended up holding an end. The other guys have struck at the other end. I suppose that's what's happened over here.
Yeah. Okay. Who's your next pick?
Yeah, so I feel like here on, there's actually no correct answer. I'm going to go with volume for my next pick. And I do rate this bowler or not. I'm going
hair
to stick
volume
with my,
or wickets volume?
No, no hair volume at all. Wickets volume. And I'm going to stick to my trend and pick another really tall bloke in Mornay Morkel as my third pick.
Okay.
And it's a very, very, you know, distinguished sort of career. You look at his numbers, 309 wickets and 86 test matches at an average of 27.66. So that's a bit on the higher end. Best figures of 9 for 110. It's again one of those cases where you've got Steyn and Philander in the same attack. But that is another really, really good fast bowling trio. And I feel like Mornay Morkel, just because he's bowling with those guys, doesn't probably end up getting all those accolades that he deserves. Now he's coaching India. He's their fast bowling coach. And I mean, he was a proper threat. He would extract bounce on almost any surface. And I mean, that guy could crank it up a notch, right? Like, he was quick.
I wonder if he has a lower average because of those other guys, actually.
I think I remember looking this. So with, like, what was this? So with Vernon and Steyn, he averages 30, I want to say, when he played with both of them. His best years were before Vernon comes along.
Yeah, because he had the new ball a little bit at that stage. Yeah. Look, he's a fine bowler. I don't think he's the next best on this list, though. I had him quite a bit lower than you do. Mm. Varun is sort of looking at. He's a fantastic bowler. I love the 300 wickets. What do you have his match factor there?
I have his overall one and what his compared to first change bowlers. Which one do you need?
The overall one.
Versus first change bowlers, he has to be high because I had him down as one of the best.
Versus
him,
Joel
first Garner.
Change bowlers, he's like he's got 1.2.
Oh, that's good. But not as high as I thought it would be. Yeah.
Hmm.
And versus all bowlers?
His overall one is 1.14.
Yeah. It's not bad. It's quite high.
Yeah. It's okay. I mean, I don't know. Averaging 27 in that era of those South African pitches feels a little bit soft to me.
Yeah. I mean, my memory, like, of him bowling well in Australia has been shattered by Crick Info, because even though he has 58 wickets, he's averaging 33.67 in Australia, which I've just checked.
I don't remember him ever bowling well in Australia. Look, the thing with Mornay Morkel is, everyone in world cricket knows this, that if he got it right, he was probably the best bowler in the world, right? Hmm. But he got it right so rarely that it was, you know, if you compare him to someone like Steve Harmison, who had a very similar kind of bowling style, I think Steve Harmison probably went on tears for longer periods than Mornay Morkel did. No one wanted to face Mornay Morkel and no one wanted to face Steve Harmison, but there were very few times when people could actually handle facing Mornay Morkel, is maybe the better way of putting it. And realistically, he should have been better than Steve Harmison. He was quicker, he was taller. And at the end of the day, I'm not sure he always had that kind of an impact. So look, he was a fantastic bowler. I just think I've got two maybe even 2.5 players that I thought deserved to be up. But the 300 wickets goes back to what I was saying about Bob Willis. It's still a fantastic thing. And to do a lot of that from first change is also fantastic.
That's the logic that I kind of went with. I was like, okay, I'm not sure who to go with next, so I'll go with the guy with a lot of volume. And so 309 wickets kind of cut it for me when I was picking Morne. He would have gone anyway eventually, but I don't care if I picked him early. I'm just keen to see who Varun goes with now.
I just had someone. I already forgot who it was. I think I'll take Brett.
Is it Peter Siddle? Oh, okay.
Brett Lee.
Yeah. Interesting. Because I have a fair few people ahead of Brett Lee in this list.
No, I think what makes it interesting was even like Mokul, and there's some other bowlers I was thinking were first chain. So I get why in elite bowling attack, you wouldn't take a 10 for, but Lee had the new ball for quite a lot of it, right? And there was a brief window where he was the lead bowler and he didn't have Warren and McGrath or Dizzy with them. So I'm a bit surprised.
It was pretty brief though, wasn't it? It was only maybe a couple of years. Yeah.
No, he took, what was it, Jared? I think he took 54 wickets in 9 matches for like a streak. I'm surprised there wasn't an accidental 10 wicket haul in.
Do you know how I know that? It's in Ricky Ponting's book, but it's written in the weirdest way possible, where Ricky Ponting says, Brett Lee took 54 wickets in 9 matches or 57 wickets in 9 matches, whatever it is. He goes, Glenn McGrath never even did that in a 9 match streak. And I was thinking, like, there's a way to write that that makes it sound more honest, which is someone told me or a statistician looked this up, but instead Ricky Ponting's trying to pretend like he was looking up the stats for a 9. It was so, I just remember that line in that book for so long for whatever reason. But yes, no, you're right. Look, he's good. I had him lower again. I had both of those guys. I think there's 3 better bowlers than what you two have picked here.
Well, with Binga, I have memories of my childhood where I was absolutely mesmerized. It was the bowling action. It was the chainsaw celebration. But as I've grown older and have started working in cricket, I don't really rate his test career as much anymore because, you know, in that bowling attack, sure, there were a lot of other bowlers, but he's averaging over 30. And sure, the volume factor is still there, Varun, 310 wickets in 76 test matches. But I don't know, man, he kind of dropped off.
Yeah, I kind of think the longer I've worked in cricket, the more I go the other way. I think there was a bunch of issues here. One, Jason Gillespie should have been the best first change bowler outside of Joel Garner we've ever seen. And instead he was given the new ball. And I understand not taking the new ball away from him because by the time Lee came along, Gillespie wasn't far off McGrath. And how do you take that new ball away from him at that point? But you've then got a swing bowler who's not bowling with the new ball, which makes absolutely no sense. Secondly, most of Lee's career is right in the peak of the batting era, right?
True.
He's like, his numbers are like the anti Kumar Sangakkara numbers, right? When you look at them, you're just like, oh my God, this guy basically starts when everyone is making runs and finishes like 4 or 5 years before everyone stops making runs, right?
Yeah.
And so he completely gets done in that. And if you look at his match factor, I don't think it's that much different than say Mitchell Starc. And yet Mitchell Stark's going to be remembered as a much better test bowler because his bowling average is probably going to end up being lower, right? So he was misused and everything else. That said, I still think there's 2 or 3 bowlers I would have had slightly higher than him. But again, it's not massively different to where I had him. What are we up to? Is that the 9th player?
Is it? I've got 2 picks remaining. So does Varun.
That was the 8th player. Yeah, I had him at 10 on my list. So he's not far away from where I had him.
Okay.
Well, you've got back-to-back picks now, so pick those guys who you think should have gone ahead of both Morne, Mokul and Brett Lee.
I do not understand how you have all been watching so much recent cricket and not gone with Neil Wagner.
Yeah, I had him on the list. I was just confused where to place
him. I will contend that because I feel like I completely get why he doesn't have a 10 for, because if you look at he plays with Saudi and Bolt, I'd imagine they'd clean up a lot.
They don't have a spinner, though. Quite often, they didn't have a third bowler.
That is true.
I mean, you could argue that Morne probably had that a little bit as well. But I just think if you look at Neil Wagner and the amount of overs he bowled, right, and his overall record, what is his match factor at first change and overall, I would assume is better than Morne Morkel's. But I could be wrong, Varun.
I'm just checking that. 1 second, sorry.
Because I would say that you've got, this is what's interesting.
1.32.
Oof. Okay.
That's so good. That is ridiculous.
So I think for a minimum of 100, because he's just behind Cummins and Garner. So Cummins and Garner are comfortably 1 and 2. Then it's Wagner. And then
that's one of the best first change bowls of all time. And what the interesting thing we've seen here is that Garner, Morne Morkel, Brett Lee, Neil Wagner, all first change bowlers. So they're missing out on the early wickets, right, that you would get. And even if you look at someone like Bumrah, Boomer is not at his best with the new ball, right? And Gillespie probably doesn't take as many new balls as wickets as possible because McGrath's stealing them all at the other end. So there is a bit of a trend. It doesn't explain everyone on this list, of course. It doesn't really explain Linwell and Willis and some of the others. But yeah, I just think Neil Wagner it was a phenomenal career. And I think because a lot of people don't like the way he bowled and what he has done to modern cricket and how boring some of his spells could be, because, you know, some of his spells were boring as fuck, right?
But his career has broken England, right? Yeah. Like, they've tried to go full Neil Wagner and they failed.
Which should be another plus for many people, Bayram. But I just think, you know, he really is one of the most incredible players. So I'm going to have him. And then right behind him, I've got two guys, which I'm a bit surprised you both dropped. One might not have had the wickets. And so I can understand why you might have gone in that direction.
And I'm assuming you're going to pick the other guy because this guy doesn't have the wickets?
No. They're both on my list. But I would have thought these guys would have ranked slightly higher, and it'd be interesting to see what Varun has them as. But
yes,
I am
but
going
you know
to
you can only you know you can only one. Pick one of them, right?
I'm aware. Okay. I'm going to go Geoff Thompson.
Yeah, I had him.
I was going to pick him. And I knew you would pick him. I was just about to pick him.
Yeah. I have him ahead of, I think if you look at Geoff Thompson's career, if he plays in modern cricket the way that Lee and Morkel did, he gets 300 wickets, right? Like, that's kind of why I had Bob Willis up higher. I think Bob Willis's total in modern cricket it might be 300 then. I don't think he was the world record holder. I think Lilly might have had the world record, but unless Bob Willis quickly went past it. But I was trying to think about that during the ad break before. But Thompson, I think in modern cricket, would take, you know, 300 to 330 wickets, right? And was unlike anything we had ever seen before. And yet still manages to play, 5 years after he has the shoulder injury? Right. So it's not just pure pace that keeps him in after a while. And I don't think he gets the respect that he deserves. What have we got for him match factor wise?
That's been quite high, right?
He's 1.08. I take it all back. He's crap. No, yeah. But I think with Tomo, it could have been anything. He could have been, you know, it could have been like a Wacker Yunus type player. But unfortunately, the injury comes a little bit early. But if you look at him, he's still, he takes 200 wickets in 51 games. And over the first few years of his career, he had, you know, really, really good averages. And then that just drops off after that shoulder injury. And he's never really the same after that. And yet he still hangs around. But he had that great period from 74 to 77, 78. I can't remember when he did his shoulder, but where he was unlike anything we'd ever seen before.
Yeah, I mean, look, he's taken 200 wickets on the dot, but 51 test matches is not a lot of test matches. And he still ended up averaging he's taken his wickets at 28 apiece despite the injury. So I think it's a good pick. The Wagner one.
He probably got more wickets at the other end than anyone ever has, Geoff Thompson, because he was so much quicker than anyone else that people were taking chances at the other end.
Yeah. The Wagner one is fascinating because he ends up with more wickets than Jason Gillespie by one wicket. He has 260 wickets to Gillespie's 259 and he plays lesser test matches. He plays just 64 tests. And I do think that there is an element of the whole, you know, he wasn't sexy enough, but bounces to me are quite sexy. And I love the fact that
his
he was a bit of a warrior. But he was a bit of a warrior, right? Like, he has broken toes and that doesn't matter. He's just going to continue to bowl long spells. I do feel like, you know, in hindsight, I should have picked him because I was confused between him and Morne Morkel and I went with more wickets. So, yeah.
That's also fair. I mean, to be fair, you know, it was the fact that he's even close to Morne Morkel on the wickets tally compared when you think about the kind of career he ends up having is remarkable. Yeah.
True. And I mean, his average is 27.57. So that for his role is quite good. And came really close, 9 for 73. Best bowling figures in a game. Okay, that means that we're back to Varun. But before he picks his next cricketer or bowler, we shall be taking a short break. You guys are watching Crick Picks with Jared Bayram and Varun. And go nowhere because we will be back in like half a minute.
I once made a pair in a club game, which is almost impossible to do. But I have been obsessed with batting my entire life. And so I put that into my new book, The Art of Batting. Being that I'm not very good at that skill, I decided to talk to other people who were. So I hit up as many contacts as I could just to talk about Rahul Dravid, Brian Lara, AB de Villiers, Kumar Sangakkara, Ross Taylor, Susie Bates, Nasser Hussain, Ian Chappell, and so many, many, many more. I wanted batters to talk about how they and their friends made runs, because that is the art of batting.
Welcome back to Crick Picks. You guys are with Jared Bayram and Varun, and we are currently attempting to draft the best test bowlers who have never taken a 10-wicket haul. Varun has his next pick. Is this your penultimate pick, Varun? Is it?
Yeah.
Yes, this would be my
favorite. Is this when it gets hard for you guys? Because I think you guys have missed some people.
I am happy because there are three names in my head right now.
5 minutes ago, Jared.
But for me, I've got three names in front of me. Probably Varun will pick one of them, and that means that I know what my next two picks are. So I'm quite happy. Yeah.
I think I'm going to take the first bowler on this list to not play like 50 test matches. So I'll go Ryan Harris. That's one of the only reasons I'm like a bit hesitant picking him. Is not, I don't doubt his quality. It's just that 27 tests is not a lot. So I'm not surprised he doesn't have a 10 foot. But I do think on quality alone, I think he belongs on this list.
So yeah, I think on quality, I think there's another bowler you've missed who also on quality deserves to be on this list. But that's fine. Ryan Harris was incredible. And he's been picked on lots of these lists because he was so good.
And he was in my long list, but it's just the fact that, like, how many wickets does he end up with, Varun, in total? Is it like 120? Yeah, 113. So you're asking him to take, you know, 1/10 of his wickets in a single game? That's where I was iffy on Ryan Harris.
He's got two ninefers in 27.
He probably probably should have got a 10-wicket haul because he was so good for that brief amount of time. But I had him just outside my... I had him around like 14, 15. I wasn't sure what exact direction to go in there.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. I did have him on my long list, but he wasn't one of the three names that I had in front of me. So now Varun, instead of making my life easy, he's made my life hell.
I thought
I've got a similar, not so high volume, but great fast bowler pick that I could go for. And I'm just going to compare the averages real quick and I'll buy myself some time. Yeah, I'm going to go with Ian Bishop as my next pick. He surely has to be on this list. 43 tests, 161 wickets, a bowling average of 24.27, which is phenomenal. Again, injury kind of screws him over. He might be the first guy on this list who hasn't even taken a 9-for. His best bowling performance in a test match is 8-for-57, which is shocking to me. And, you know, I haven't obviously watched him play ever, but based on all the conversations I've had with people who have watched Ian Bishop when he was in his pomp, they do speak really, really highly of him. And, I mean, he's a sweetheart, great guy, love him, so I have no issues.
I actually think one of the conversations we had with Jared spooked me off it because I think I remember Jared once saying his numbers do flatter him a bit. So I'm like, okay.
Ryan Harris. Ian Bishop.
Ian Bishop, yeah. I think you said it once. I don't remember.
I said his numbers don't flatter him. He should have ended up averaging about 19.
Yeah.
I still think if he was fully fit with his brain, his athleticism, his height, his skill, he could have been the greatest bowler of all time.
Okay. Oh. Well, Varun, I don't know what you were listening to.
Because I feel like I remember Ian Bishop at some point coming up. I thought it was the opposite.
If you go back and have a look at him, he could swing the ball and swing the ball, which most West Indian bowlers can't do both. They could do one or the other, right? He angled the ball back in but could take it away. He could beat you with pace, with bounce, with seam movement, with accuracy. I thought Ian Bishop could have been absolutely anything. The only reason I didn't take him any earlier is just because he just doesn't play, right? And also, a lot of his career, he's not that bowler. Like, if you go back and have a look at his whole career, he's not really that bowler. But if you look at pure skill sets, I don't know if we've ever had anyone who has all the attributes in a way that he did. But that's not the career he has, if that makes sense. So if you go back and you look at his career, he has... where are we here? He averages 23, 19, 23, 18 up until 1993. And that's the bowler I'm talking about. And after that, it's 24, 26, 30, and 54, right? So if you're looking at his actual, if you're looking at talent, he can be really, really high on this list. But if you're looking at, he is completely two different bowlers. And he was, you know, not the same. But again, a bit like we were saying before with some of the other bowlers, the ability to stick around and still be useful when you're not, you know, at that level. But no, Ian Bishop was just incredible. I'll try and find it for you. There's a great clip of him on YouTube. I think it's bowling in a test match where he's bowling to someone good, but he's angling the ball into this person, right? And he's bowling back of a length, Bayram, and then he's swinging it away.
Wow.
And you're just like, well, how do you play that? You're not expecting the ball to swing off that length to begin with. It's at about 88 miles an hour, which at that stage was one of the fastest balls on earth. It's bouncing up at you because of his height, right? And you're also expecting to play it on your hip and you're being beaten outside the off stump every ball. It's like, what do you do to Ian Bishop? Just a genius.
Also, what's up with these incredibly tall fast bowlers not getting 10 wicket hauls? Because that's like all four of my picks, right? Like, this definitely
first change again, though, isn't he? First change again. It's true. You know, it's a big disadvantage if you can't get those that early burst of wickets, right? And if you're bowling behind Courtney and Courtley, which again, oh my God, he would be a new ball bowler with any other team in the world.
And a lot of these guys don't end up getting 10 fizz because they're in really good bowling attacks. Like, I feel like that's 80% of our list over here.
It's much easier to get, like, who I would assume people like Richard Hadley and Murali are probably right up the top of 10 wicket hauls per test match compared to most people, right? Because they're not competing with anyone. And at a certain point, you just have to throw the ball back to them at every opportunity, right? And not only are they not competing with anyone else, they're also like, anytime that the conditions are in favor of bowling, you have to use one of those guys.
Well, I mean, I know that Bish doesn't have 200 test wickets, but because he has that, you know, era or phase in his career, that pre-injury, he's unplayable. It was rather surprising to me that he hasn't even taken a 9 for, let alone a 10 for. So I'm happy with that pick, and Jared has praised him so much that I feel further validated. I feel like I've exercised my ghosts of Morne Mokal. And now, here's the fascinating thing. I was comparing two guys or two fast bowlers whilst you were on, or like in like halfway between your monologue, Jared. And what's fascinating to me is that both of these guys have 229 test wickets. One averages 28.39 with the ball. The other averages 27.71 with the ball. Oh. They both have an economy of 3.3. It is unreal how similar these records are. But one of them plays his home cricket in England and the other plays his home cricket in India. The English guy has played 58 test matches and the Indian has played 64. Even though the guy I'm about to pick, his average is on the higher side or the other guy averages lower, I'll go with Darren Goff and I'll tell you why. Because Goffey doesn't play with a lot of bowlers who are exceptional. And he plays in a shit England team where you'd expect that he'd run through an opposition team, at least, you know, in one of those test matches. And 64 tests is quite a few. 229 wickets, not a tall guy. Haha, I finally picked a short bloke, right? And I suppose just because the other guy plays his home cricket in India and it's tougher over there, I felt like Goffey had a better shot at taking the 10 for, which has eluded him.
Yeah, I had those guys. I'm assuming. Have you named the other person, or we're just guessing?
No, I haven't. I want Varun to not figure out who he is. Okay. Yeah.
I definitely know who it is. The wickets was so included. I'm like, the moment you said wickets, I knew you were talking about.
I think I couldn't separate those two guys either. I think I had them in a slightly different order than you've ended up with, but at the same time, it was very, very similar. It was very similar the way that you went. If you look at Goffey's record, specifically when playing in Asia, you'll actually see, I don't think he ever plays a test match in India for some reason, but he takes, about 24 wickets at 23 or something in Asia during his career. And realistically, outside of South Africa, he was really good everywhere. And he wasn't really an English style bowler. And so he's not like most English bowlers, I think, dominate at home, right? And he doesn't. Yeah. In fact, I think he averages 27 on the road. To take 100 wickets at 27 on the road in Test cricket in a bad team, right? I don't know. I mean, he had Andy Carrick, and he ends up with, what, Flintoff and Harmy a little bit as well. I'm trying to think of who else he would have had. So he wasn't completely on his own as far as wicket taking, but the kind of bowler he kind of was, if that makes sense, because a lot of those guys were much better in different kinds of conditions than he was. And so quite often, when Goffey was good, he was the only bowler who could be good. And I thought, he was a brilliant bowler and probably badly used by England. I think if they had him these days, I mean, he'd be the ideal bowler for modern England, right?
Yeah.
And they haven't had anyone like him since. And there's that great story of him bowling for Yorkshire, and he was bowling like medium pace. I think Dominic Cork was facing him, or someone he knew was facing him. And Richie Richardson just went up and went, "Do you really want to be a medium fast bowler? Just go back and bowl fast." And from that day forward, Goffey only ever bowled at maximum pace almost any time he could, right? And it ruined his body in the end, but it made him so entertaining to watch, right? Like, he really was in every way. He's still a very entertaining dude. I don't want to say anything nice about him because he might hear this, but he still is a very entertaining dude. And he does live his life in that way.
Yeah. Also, similar body type to Ryan Harris, like they're both kind of stocky dudes.
There's about a foot difference, I would say, is maybe the best way of looking at it. He's kind of, he's built like one of those old fashioned English bowlers with a bigger ass, like that sort of, that fast bowling ass that they used to have. But he actually bowls more like Wacker Yunus, right? I would say. Mm. And Wacker Yunus also had a big ass, right?
He bowls a lot like a subcontinent seamer, right? I think that's...
He's averaging 22.58 across six tests in Asia. 24
wickets. Is it that low? Sorry, I thought it was 23. But yeah, it's low, right? He attacked the stumps in a way that no one in that era outside of Wacker Yunus was doing, right? He really was someone who was always at your stumps and your pads and probably does better in a DRS era as well because he was already bowling the right length for that.
Yeah, and more the reason why it's startling that he doesn't end up with the 10-foot.
The other thing that's interesting about the 10-foot is, you know, we talked about some of these guys on this list. Like, he was a new ball bowler, and also he was a guy that did take wickets in you know, big chunks. Like, as in, you know, he's got a hat trick. Quite often he would run through a side in an innings. Those are the sorts of guys that usually end up with 10-wicket hauls. So it is a bit surprising he didn't end up with that.
All right, Varun, do the honors. Pick the other guy.
Mohammad Shami, let's do it.
Yeah.
it makes sense. Yeah,
the thing that's really freaking me out.
Bowler, right?
Yeah. The thing that's really freaking me out is that they both not only have the same amount of wickets, which is 229, but the economy rate of 3.3 is just creepy, flat out creepy.
The match factors are very similar to 1.03 for Goff and 1.06 for Shami. So,
all right.
Might be the same bowlers, you know. The strike rates are all very similar to 51. I think it's like 52 for Goffe and 50 for Shami.
Has anyone ever seen them in the same room? Is my question.
I don't believe I have. Yeah. So Shami is again like a bit very weird because I don't think he always knew what length to bowl outside of Asia.
Yeah.
He had the classic issue, like usually with Asian bowlers, fast bowlers, sorry, they have the issue where they either bowl too full or they bowl too short because those are the lengths you want to bowl in Asia. You either want to completely attack the stumps or you want to be back of the length because the bounce is a bit low. I think Shami always had the back of the length issue where he always bowls that more towards the 7 to 9 meter range than he does in the 5 to 7 meter range, which always I think holds him back quite a bit. There's a brief period where he does figure his shit out and he's very good. But and the other thing also we have to talk about, his first change as well, another first change bowler is very good at his job, I think.
Also, I feel like Shami is someone who does exceptionally well at home, right? So one-third of his wickets come in India at 22 apiece, which is unreal. And those are the test matches in which he's definitely not going to end up with a 10-foot. He comes close. Yeah. He takes his best figures of 9 for 118 in a test match in India. But you've got Jadeja and Ashwin in the same team and it's really going to be tough for you to end up with a 10-foot. And he's not good.
And when Bumrah comes in, they don't always pick him, right? I think that's the other thing. If Bumrah's playing, you don't always need both of them because they do the same thing.
One of the reasons I went with Goff, even though I do understand your one plays in England, one doesn't, but one of the reasons I went with Goff directly is just because how good he was away from home and how much he worked out, you know, away conditions. And we all know how talented Mohammad Shami is. I think he's probably more talented than Darren Goff, but I'm not sure he's had the better test career, but it's still been a fantastic one, right? There's not much between both of them. I'm actually surprised both of their match factors aren't higher, but I think they are bowlers that when it works, there's not much you can do, but they maybe have a few more days compared to some of the other guys on this list when it doesn't work. Neither of them are particularly tall, right? They don't have anything to it's either swinging or seaming for them, or they're coming straight onto the bat and skidding.
Yeah, I mean, they both attack the stumps.
The other thing with Shami is that, so Shami averages 30 in the first innings and 24 in the second, so he's a bit of a second innings bully. I think they call him the second innings Shami, I believe is the nickname for him. So even in Asia, and it's always the fourth innings where he comes in.
Yeah, it's fascinating that we don't think he's going to play again in Test cricket, so this is where the career ends. I doubt he's going to get an opportunity to get that 10-foot, that elusive 10-foot. But also, I kind of understand why he doesn't have a 10-foot, which is also why I didn't pick him ahead of Goff. You know?
Yeah.
Anyway, so now I've got three names.
No spinners yet, right?
No spinners yet. But spinners generally do end up taking 10-foots when they play on helpful surfaces. So there's that element. Yeah.
I didn't even know who's the best spinner. I don't even have a spinner on my list.
I don't either. Did Hugh Trumbull take a 10-foot?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I'd be shocked if he didn't. He feels like he did. He feels emotionally like a 10. Like,
do you know Johnston is Jared, the Australian spinner?
Yeah, Bill Johnston.
What about Aubrey?
Yeah, Jared is 23.9 and a match factor of 1.49. So I don't know where those wickets came from.
But he bowled pace and spin, Bill Johnson. Are you saying he never took a 10-wicket haul?
I can't find one.
Oh my God.
Okay. I'm going to have to check this. The only other Johnston I knew was Trent Johnston, and he definitely didn't take a 10-wicket haul.
He never took a 10-wicket haul in Test cricket. I can promise you that.
Yeah.
All right.
I mean, might get
Bill Johnston has 160 wickets in 40 tests, so he's kind of bishoping it, right? But he didn't have, or he didn't take a 10 wicket haul, so you could go with him, or there are three other names on my list, so you could go with one of those guys.
I might go with Bill Johnston now.
Or some person we've never heard of, because that'd be the most Jared thing to do.
No, I didn't. I think I can tell you who the rest of my list was, because I might as well just explain it from here. I had Heath Streak.
Yep, same.
I had Freddie Flintoff. Uh-huh. And I had Peter Siddle, but obviously I stepped back from him as well.
I'll give you another one. I've got Colin Croft on here.
Yeah, Colin Croft's interesting as well.
Yeah, it was between him and Ryan Harris for me for that one slot. I couldn't pick both of them.
Interesting.
But I mean, looking at Bill Johnson's record, it's hard not to. I don't know how I missed him, actually. originally. So I'll just go Bill Johnson because I think he probably is a better bowler than Streak or Fred Flintoff. I would be interested to know who has the better match factor out of Heath Streak and Freddie, though. But yeah, also, I'll go Bill Johnson. Bill Johnson basically was like, I think he was trying to become a quick bowler, left armer, and I think he had some bad injury or something. And he ends up bowling medium pace. And then after a while, he's like, wait, I could bowl spin as well. So we don't have we don't even know what his wickets are from, whether they're from pace or spin.
I'm comparing him to spin, so I'm not sure like if that's right or not. So
He definitely bowled both. He's a mixture bowler. But we don't. The point being is no one will know that one. Mm. But he was, he still ended up averaging 24 in Test cricket with a bunch of wickets after being injured and not probably being as good as he should be.
And it holds up versus all the opposition too, right? I think it's not like he's bullied the weak teams either.
He was a really good cricketer. Don't get me wrong. Yeah. A really, really good cricketer. And I don't know how I didn't have him on my list. So I'm more than happy to make up for that as well. I'm trying to think. When did he play? Yeah, he plays for about 8 years. So he would have been playing with Limwell. So there's another guy. So him and Limwell are both on this list. And so quite clearly, there was a lot of good bowling around that was that was clashing with each other, which is another... Yeah. Also, probably not a new ball bowler.
First time, I think this might be the first time I've told reminded Jared about old cricketer.
Yeah.
That's definitely a new thing.
Disgusted. Yeah. Not just an old cricketer, an old Victorian cricketer.
Sack him.
Which is even worse.
Fire yourself, Jared.
So what is Streak's match factor and what is Flintoff's match factor?
I was really keen on
1.09. 1.09, yeah.
0.99.
Okay. So he's 1% worse. With Streak, I was... really keen because he plays for Zimbabwe and you expect him to just, you know, take 10 wickets in one of those test matches, right?
Yeah, I suppose a lot of their wickets were dead. No one was taking wickets. And also, when they were taking wickets, it was probably more for spin, right, at that stage. But I'm surprised they didn't get one away from home. I had Streak as a better bowler than Flintoff. I've talked about this before. I think we've used him in our trades before, haven't we, Varun? Because I have him so high that we can use him with trades because he really was a fantastic cricketer. I'm still surprised that Flintoff isn't a slight plus. I would have had him as a plus.
If you just compare him to first change bowlers, he's 1.13 for Flintoff. So he's better when you just compare him to just first change bowlers.
But he did open the bowling quite a bit, didn't he?
He did. I think it's...
We've talked about this before. He could never get tail enders out. That's Flintoff's big issue, is he never cashed in the way that a normal bowler does. And so I think if you look at him versus top order players, he's probably a better bowler than Heath Streak against top order. But Heath Streak probably has a normal pattern of just getting the tail out. But Heath Streak was great. So I'm pretty happy with them. And then I wasn't ever going to take Peter Siddle, but Peter Siddle was another bowler I thought about, that played for a very long time and mostly in a four-man attack, right? But again, probably first change a lot and never... Did he take a 9-wicket haul, Peter Siddle?
Not sure, but I thought of picking him just on the basis of
one.
The fact that
one. Okay.
I'm wearing a Stars jersey, or not a jersey, but a hoodie. So I was like, maybe spiritually I should go for Peter Siddle.
I mean, hasn't he played for about 9 Big Bash? He's played for both Melbournes, hasn't he? And Adelaide? Did he play for Hobart as well?
I remember him in Adelaide, that's for sure. And this year, I'm pretty sure he was for the Stars or playing for the Stars. Heath Streak is fascinating.
140, right? Yeah, that's insane.
Yeah. Heath Streak takes 216 wickets, by the way, in 65 test matches. He's taking his wickets at 28 apiece. 7 5 wicket hauls, best bowling figures of 9 for 72 in a test match. And I'm just keen to see what the home record is like. That will kind of give this away, right? Because I need to know how many opportunities he had to take a 10 for. Okay. Yeah, checks out.
Like even in general, like even in a he plays for like a not a very good bowling attack. So I'm surprised he doesn't have one because.
Yeah, that's the one thing I would say. But I do think that a lot of those times, Bairam, he was playing on wickets that were incredibly flat. And like there was, you'd have to go back, but I would assume there would have
been. I'd imagine if like Andy Flowers playing like 600 balls in an innings, there isn't a lot of time.
You know, that's what I mean. Like my memory of a lot of those Zimbabwean games is there would be like a 3-day innings or a 2.5-day innings where no one could score. Like he was a pretty attacking bowler his streak, and his econ is still like 2.5, right? Because no one's scoring on those wickets and you can't get anyone out. But yeah, he probably should have got a 10 wicket haul. Because he could swing it. He was decently paced and he would bowl all day. He would bowl long spells. So
he came close twice. In the West Indies, he took his best figures in a test match, which were 9 for 72. And at home, he took 9 for 105. He might have a third 9 for, which is worse than 9 for 105. I can't see that data on Crick Info. But yeah, I had him quite high. Like if I was going last, for instance, I would have definitely gone Heath Street because I don't know who Bill Johnston is, for starters. And yeah, it's just the he plays for Zimbabwe factor that really does surprise me.
Yeah, no, I think that's why I always use him as my what is it? The streak war conundrum, right? Because I don't think people realize how good Heath Streak was as a cricketer, especially when you factor in he could bat as well, right? And realistically, like he had a lot going for his game. It was a lot of good bowlers in the world at that era as well. So I can understand why people don't remember it. But if you ever saw him bowl a proper spell, you're like, oh, wow, okay. Yeah. This is not like, you know how like sometimes those struggling sides make test cricket and they've got a guy who can't really bat or can't really bowl? Like Streak kind of looked like that from the outside. And then you watched him bowl and you're like, no, he's a frontline bowler and he can hold the bat good enough to be a very good number eight.
And took the new ball, so... Yeah. A lot of things don't kind of add up over here.
I mean, he kind of had to take the new ball. There aren't many other guys. Like, I don't think Olonga and Pommy were stealing the new ball off him. He really was a one-man show. Like, it was, they really did struggle a bit. Like, Edo Brandes, when he was fit, I suppose, is the other guy. But yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, rest in peace to Heath Streak. Sorry for not picking you, mate. My long list included Colin Croft and Peter Siddle, and I don't have any other name on over
Colin
here.
Colin Croft so was a good one. Yeah, I missed that one as well. Yeah. Baron, did you have anyone else?
No, I think that's it. Like, I obviously.
I think Baron didn't even have 15. Go,
but I think we took
Baron had like 12.
I had like 3, and then everything else was just making stuff up on the spot.
Okay, well, Jared, you can read out picks to the viewers and listeners.
Bairam went Joel Garner, Josh Hazlewood, Mornay Morkel, Ian Bishop, Darren Goff. By the way, if you pick Mohammed Shami there, you win.
Really?
Yeah. Like, I mean, from the fans' perspective,
true.
I think you would have won. Varun goes Jasprit Bumrah, Jason Gillespie, Brett Lee, Ryan Harris, Mohammed Shami. I went Ray Linwell, Bob Willis, Neil Wagner, Jeff Thompson, and Bill Johnston.
I know that's Sorab's vote for sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, you'll definitely get Sorab's vote, but I feel like had I gone Wagner over Mornay Morkel, I would have definitely won this.
Oh, I don't know. I think Mornay Morkel's pretty popular. Well, maybe less so now as a bowling coach for India and they're not always bowling well. But I think I've always thought Mornay Morkel's probably more popular in there than other places, whereas Wagner, maybe not as much. I think if you take Mohammed Shami, you've got a bunch of bowlers there that I think, like, you know, everyone loves Bish, right? Whereas Goffey, I don't think there are that many younger fans who will understand why you've taken an English bowler with the same average as an Indian bowler, right? I know we've explained it, but if you're just looking at the list, but yeah, it's probably out of you two. I think I might struggle with Linmore, Willis, Tomo, and Johnston. Poor Neil. Neil's doing a lot of carrying of the modern load on this one for me.
I think I was also thinking Sobers because he bowled so much. In a game.
I thought about Sobers as well. Yeah. I mean, he's probably not that far away again, is he? But I don't think he's a better bowler than Bill Johnston, for instance. And I think if you had the choice between Sobers for his whole career or Siddle or Croft, you would take the other two.
I was afraid Jared was going to pick Neil Adcock because when I was doing my research, his name came up. And I was like, oh, I've only ever heard this name from Jared. So
how many wickets does he take, though? It can't be many.
No, like 100.
Couldn't be.
Like he plays 21 tests, I want to say.
I'll be honest. I got down to... 104 wickets. I reckon I got down to about 115 wickets and then went, I don't care after this. Do you know what I mean? Like, once you got down to there, I was like, there might be better bowlers beneath this, but I'm like, for my list, you have to have taken, you know, you have to have played enough tests to have taken a 10-wicket haul.
Yeah, I think volume does really matter for this one. But anyway, you guys let us know who you think wins this bout of Crick Picks. And also tell us who you think we missed, because I'm sure there are a couple of bowlers who we just, you know, didn't kind of think of. So yeah, let us know all of that fun stuff in the comments below. And that's all for this episode of Crick Picks. We'll be back, you know, in another show, another day. And you guys have fun. Enjoy yourselves. Take care. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this podcast on the Combox Network. There is an ad-free version of this you can find by supporting us on Patreon at Good Areas Podcast. You can also access our Discord channel there. Please like, subscribe, and rate this show. Every one of these helps us. If there was a guest on a show, you can find their links in the show notes. Huge thanks to Rakshit, Ishit, and everyone else who helps us get our content out there. If you want to know more about us, head to combox.tv.
If you make a lot of content like me, oh, you are going to need help. And that is why we use Minvo.pro, a slicing and dicing tool that uses AI to conjure up incredible clips from your podcasts and meetings. If you make content, go to Minvo.pro to cut it.